Hey, everybody, and welcome into the Ritz Report. It is Thursday, May 18th, 2023. Thank you for joining me on today's podcast. Thanks for coming along, everybody. We're over the hump. Hump day is behind us when we're heading into the weekend. Hope everybody has good plans for the weekend. What are we talking about today? What are we talking about? Well, we are going to talk about the Miller Lite ad that we discussed on Tuesday. Apparently, it's not brand new. That was information for me that I didn't know. It came out in March, and we will touch on that. Also, we will touch on the sales of Bud Light as they continue to slide into the dumpster as Anheuser-Busch can't figure out what to do here to stop the bleeding. Beyond that, we are going to get into the Durham report because, folks, I have to tell you that I have never seen anything like this in my life. And when I printed out the first few pages of the Durham report, the executive summary, and I started to read it, you think that you're reading a Tom Clancy novel. You think that you're reading a novel about espionage and spycraft, and it's like, this cannot be real. And unfortunately, it is real. And I see the talking heads on TV, and I hear the people on radio talking about it. I saw the CNN had Jake Tapper, who essentially touched on it, essentially said, hey, this report makes the FBI look pretty bad. And oh, by the way, it partially exonerates Donald Trump. Folks, it completely exonerates Donald Trump. And to give it a, 7-second, 10-second, 15-second soundbite is just wrong. It's wrong to the American people. It's wrong to all the work that went into this report. And it's wrong because people need to understand exactly what went on here. This is crazy. And we are going to get into it in a moment. But let's start with Miller Lite. Miller Lite, we played the ad on Tuesday, we played the ad of Miller Lite talking about how women had created beer. And I said, right, who cares who created beer? Right? We're all people. Some people drink beer, some people don't. Who cares who created it? It doesn't really matter. And for you to think that you're going to create a beer ad that walks around talking about how great it is that women created beer and how terrible it is that we had women in bikinis selling beer, it doesn't make me want to buy a beer.
Loser.
At all. Doesn't make me want to buy a beer at all. I want to buy a beer from a company that I have a generally favorable opinion of the brand. And regardless of whether they were in bikinis or it was the ad for, I think it was Budweiser, it was Waza, and they had the frogs, all of those ads, whether it directly or indirectly made you want to drink beer, it left you with a favorable impression of the brand. That's the point. It's not to make you run out and purchase the product. It's to give you a favorable impression. And this Miller Lite ad, the Dylan Mulvaney nonsense, does not give you a good impression of this brand that you want to run out and buy their product. From the Wall Street Journal on May 18th by Jennifer Maloney. Jennifer Maloney, hey Jennifer, how you doing? Molson Coors Beverage defended a marketing executive who came under attack on social media this week from conservative commentators unhappy with a satirical ad the brewer ran during Women's History Month. Now, is it really satirical? When they created it and launched it before the Dylan Mulvaney backlash, was it actually satirical, or we're just saying now that it was satirical? Because it is so ridiculous and people think that it's so silly and absurd and stupid that they have to call it satirical when initially they probably thought to themselves, we're doing a great thing. The piece continues, quote, people can take issue with our ad and our brand, but we won't stand by as people personally attack our employees, especially given that these are company decisions and are never made by one single person. Company spokesman Adam Collins said in an email, well, Mr. Collins, I would say that if you stand by your people personally, then you should want them to be employed. You should want to sell as much Miller Lite as possible, right? So we should have ad campaigns that focuses on what? The broadest number of customers that you can get to buy your product. By singling out women as the creators of beer and essentially kicking the men to the curb, do you think that makes them feel like you want them to buy your product? It doesn't for me. The piece continues, Sophia Colucci, chief marketing officer for the brewer, chief marketing officer, I guess she was involved, had to take down her social media account after she became the target of personal attacks over a Miller Lite ad satirizing the sexist history of beer marketing. Again, is it satire, or are we only saying that now because after the Dylan Mulvaney backlash, you realize, like, oh my God, look at what is happening to the sales of Bud Light across the country. We don't want that to happen to us. The ad, released in March, featured actor and comedian Ilian Glazer, I guess her name is. I don't know how to say it. I think it's Ilian? Ilana? Ilana Glazer? Ilana? Discussing the beer company's depiction of women in past advertising. And then they quote part of what she says here. From Mesopotamia to the Middle Ages to colonial America, women were the ones doing the brewing, she said. Centuries later, how did the industry pay homage to the founding mothers of beer? They put us in bikinis. Wow. Yeah, that makes me want to buy a beer. Conservative commentators criticized the Miller Lite ad, some calling it woke. Podcaster Joe Rogan said, "I hate identity politics with a passion. It's so stupid. Human beings made beer, okay? Some human beings look good in bikinis." That's just logic. There you have it, folks. Logic out there for everyone to hear. One of the reasons they hate Rogan. Collins continued and said, "This video was about two things. Worm poop and saying women shouldn't be forced to mud wrestle in order to sell beer." I have a question. Who said women needed to mud wrestle, sell beer? Who said that? So Collins comes out and makes a straw man defense for something that nobody is saying. He continues, "Neither of these things should be remotely controversial, and we hope beer drinkers can appreciate the humor and ridiculousness of this video from back in March." Again, I would bet you when they made this ad, it wasn't all about the humor. It wasn't all about the humor. The piece continues, "Nearly 40% of legal beer drinkers are women, according to Nielsen Scarborough data cited by the Beer Institute." The Beer Institute. I bet you that's a good place to work. I bet I have money that has the Beer Institute was created by a bunch of men, but I digress. "Women also tend to be the primary purchasers for the household. Big U.S. beer brands in recent years have made more marketing pitches directed at female consumers." And this commercial I had forgotten all about, but they reference it here. In 2019, Coors Light gained attention for a television commercial in which a woman came home from work, fed her fish, grabbed a beer from the fridge, and pulled her bra out from under her blouse. Now, I ask you, I am a middle-aged American man. I've had many girlfriends before I was married, and I've been married for quite a while. I have never seen a woman come home from work, feed her fish, grab a beer from the fridge, and pull her blouse out or her bra out from under her blouse. Never. Not once. Not in the girls that I dated when I was in my, you know, teens and 20s, not from my wife, not from any other female that I've ever known that has done that. See, one of the things about humor that I think these people are missing is that generally there has to be a shred of truth in it. So having that commercial where a woman comes home and does this isn't real. You're just making it up. We see what you're doing, but we just look at it and go, that's dumb. It doesn't make me want to drink beer. Colucci, the CMO, was promoted to that position in March. Whoopsie. She was previously vice president of marketing for Miller Brands. She is the second female marketing executive at the big beer brand this year to come under personal attack over promotion. Sales of Bud Light fell sharply last month after the brand sent a personalized can to transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney, and Mulvaney showed an image of the can in a sponsored post on Instagram. So, if we look at what has happened to Bud Light beer sales across the country, they continue to decline. And the thing that's interesting is I will put this up on Twitter, and I'll also put it up at RitzReport.com. It is a map of the United States that is color-coded with the percentage points that each state is down in terms of Bud Light sales plunging. What's interesting is that red state or blue state, it doesn't seem to matter. It's down across the board. Across the board. The highest that it is down is 29%, sort of like in the Rocky Mountain region. Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, down 29%, 30% for the week. Insane. Insane. Even you look at places like Florida is down 22%, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, 19%. So it doesn't make a difference if it's a red or a blue state. The sales are down. Again, I said this last time we talked about it. All you need to do, get out. I mean, it's too late now for Bud Light. Bud Light has, they've gone through the prop of the airplane. They're essentially just fish food at this point. I don't know how they recover. They have a new plan now that they're going to come out with a camouflage can.
This is great.
Because, you know, that's what makes everybody want to drink beer, when the can is covered in camouflage.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
I don't know where we get these people. These people are supposed to be the cream of the crop, right? These people, the CMOs, they're in charge. They're in the C-suites. They know what they're doing. There they are. Hey, how you doing, folks? We're just hemorrhaging money, and we can't figure out what to do, thanks to the people that we've hired and put in these high positions. Awesome. Moving on. Unbelievable, I tell you. What is happening to the world? The Durham Report. Okay, so I think the Durham Report is complicated enough where when you watch CNN, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, you read the New York Times, you read the Washington Post, any of these things, right? You don't get meat. There's no meat on the bone. They tell you, ah, this is what happened. Folks, it's important that the American people understand what happened here. It is so very important that they understand what happened here. So let me start off. I have the report here in front of me. So we all know that Trump was under investigation by Mueller, and Mueller came out at the end and was like, eh, there's nothing here. I think we spent $40 million on that. $40 million.
Loser, loser.
Nothing here. Great. So now we have the Durham report. So Attorney General Bill Barr decides to put Bill Durham in to do this investigation to see what exactly there was. What exactly there was in terms of interference in the 2016 election from Russia. That's what the entire thing was about. And in his opening here, he writes, what are the questions that we are trying to answer with this report? Number one, he writes, was there adequate predication for the FBI to open the Crossfire Hurricane investigation from its inception on July 31, 2016 as a full counterintelligence and foreign agents registration acts investigation? So that's the first thing we want to know. Right? Was there adequate predication for the FBI to open this investigation? Number two, the second thing we want to know, was the opening of Crossfire Hurricane as a full investigation on July 31, 2016 consistent with how the FBI handled other intelligence that it had received prior to July 31, 2016? The third thing we want to know, similarly, did the FBI properly consider other highly significant intelligence it received at virtually the same time as that used to predicate Crossfire Hurricane? Crossfire Hurricane is the investigation into Donald Trump-Russia collusion, but which related not to the Trump campaign, but rather to a purported Clinton campaign plan to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up scandal, claiming interference by Russian security services. So one of the goals of this investigation that Durham did was to find out, did the FBI consider other information, other intelligence that it had received that didn't relate to the Trump campaign, but related to the Clinton campaign and a plan that the Clinton campaign had to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up scandal, claiming interference by Russian security services? Now, that's interesting that the FBI gets evidence that says that there is, the Clinton campaign has a plan to actually create this story of Trump-Russia. They actually got evidence of that. The next thing we're trying to find out, was there evidence that the actions of any FBI personnel or third parties related to Crossfire Hurricane investigation violated any federal criminal statutes? And the last thing that we want to know, was there evidence that the actions of the FBI or department personnel in providing false or incomplete information to the Foreign Intelligence Services Court, FISC, violated any federal crimes? And then, at the end of this opening, he writes, our findings and conclusions regarding these and related questions are sobering. Are sobering. So right in the opening of the executive summary, under a heading that says, State of Intelligence Community Information Regarding Trump and Russia Prior to Opening of Crossfire Hurricane. So what did we know before this investigation opened? What did we know? And it says, before the initial receipt by FBI headquarters of information from Australia on July 28, 2016, concerning comments reportedly made in a tavern on May 6, 2016 by George Papadopoulos, the government possessed no verified information reflecting that Trump or the Trump campaign was involved in a conspiracy or a collaborative relationship with officials of the Russian government. It continues, indeed, based on the evidence gathered in multiple exhaustive and costly federal investigations into these matters, neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community appears to have any actual evidence of collusion in their holdings at the time they commenced the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. What they're saying is there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever that there was any connection between the Trump campaign and Russia. Meanwhile, we have people like Adam Schiff going on TV. Let's play that clip now, shall we?
So there's clear evidence on the issue of collusion, and this adds to that body of evidence. There's ample evidence of collusion in plain sight, and that is true.
Have Democrats found any evidence of collusion?
Yes, we have. You can see evidence in plain sight on the issue of collusion, pretty compelling evidence. And there is significant evidence of collusion. There is ample evidence, and indeed there is, of collusion of people in the Trump campaign with the Russians. I think that.
So here we have Adam Schiff on TV multiple times, this montage, saying that there's evidence of collusion. Over and over and over again. There's ample evidence. There's obvious evidence. There's all sorts of evidence. In the opening paragraph, of the Durham report, based on the evidence gathered in multiple exhaustive and costly federal investigations into these matters, neither U.S. law enforcement nor the intelligence community appears to have possessed any actual evidence of collusion. Nobody had any evidence of collusions in their holding at the commencement of Crossfire Hurricane. So there was zero evidence, and you have Adam Schiff on TV in Congress over and over and over and over again, lying to everyone, lying to the American people, lying, just lying.
Lie after lie after lie.
Just lying. And for what? To try to destroy Trump, to try to get Trump out of office, to try to do, I don't even know, whatever it is the deep state wants to do to Trump. To just go away? I mean, he has been hounded for how many years now? And they won't let up. It never ends. The guy's been out of office for how many years? They continue to hound him. The only thing they can get him on is a bookkeeping entry. And now, their biggest claim that they trumpeted for 4 years while he was in office, and even after he was gone, about this Trump-Russia collusion, right in the opening paragraph of the Durham report, there was no evidence. So let's take a step back. There's a number of players in this whole thing. A number of players. There's, if you try to think about it as a mind map, and I will also put this up at Ritz Report, I will draw a little picture about how all of these entities connect with each other. But again, this is not a 10-second soundbite story. This is not a 2-minute soundbite story. This is a complicated story. So 2016, the Clinton campaign is being represented by a law firm named Perkins Coie. They have hired them. It's an international law firm. The Clinton campaign has hired them as counsel. Perkins Coie then goes out and they hire Fusion GPS. Essentially, the idea of hiring Fusion GPS was to do opposition research into Donald Trump. So Clinton campaign paying Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie hires Fusion GPS, a guy named Glenn Simpson. Glenn Simpson turns around and he hires Christopher Steele, who owns a company called Orbis Business Intelligence. Christopher Steele claims that he's a previous British intelligence agent. And Glenn Simpson hires him also in accordance with the idea that they are going to do oppo research on Donald Trump. Christopher Steele then has a subsource named Igor Dachenko. Igor Dachenko is a Russian national, but he was living in Washington, D.C. Right, so if you think about it in terms of the connection points, it goes Clinton campaign, Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie hires Fusion GPS in order to do oppo research on Trump. Fusion GPS hires Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele has a subsource, Igor Dachenko, who is feeding him information that then end up in what are called the Steele dossier. That was one of those, like one of the stories was that Trump had hired a bunch of hookers to urinate on a bed that he thought that Obama had slept on. I mean, total nonsense. I mean, completely fabricated, right? So if you think about the way that those pieces connect together, the entire thing is originated from the Clinton campaign, and they use this law firm to essentially work through and get the information filtered back.
about what was supposedly going on with Trump. This whole thing started in May of 2016. May 6th of 2016, George Papadopoulos is supposedly in a bar in Australia. This information gets funneled back to the FBI. The FBI on July 31 of 2016 gets this information and immediately open up Crossfire Hurricane. Like, okay, so you let me make sure I understand this. You heard a conversation in a bar on the other side of the world for a guy that you think might be associated with the Trump campaign. The guy said something that you think warrants the federal government to start investigating the Trump campaign. Like, did you vet what was said in the bar? Like, shouldn't that sort of thing actually happen? So let's look at in the executive summary of the Durham report under a section titled "The Opening of Crossfire Hurricane." The record in this matter reflects upon receipt of unevaluated intelligence information from Australia that the FBI swiftly opened the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. In particular, at the direction of Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, Deputy Assistant Director for Counterintelligence Peter Strzok opened Crossfire Hurricane immediately. As soon as they had this information that some dude in a bar was talking about something, open an investigation. The matter was opened as a full investigation without ever having spoken to persons who provided the information. Let me repeat that. The matter was opened as a full investigation without ever having spoken to persons who provided the information. Further, the FBI did so. They opened this investigation without, number one, any significant review of their own intelligence databases, without any collection or examination of any relevant information from any other U.S. intelligence entities, without interviewing any of the witnesses essential to understanding the raw information that they had received, and without using any standard analytical tools typically employed by the FBI when evaluating raw intelligence. Had they done this, John Durham says in his report, had they followed these steps that they normally follow, the FBI would have learned that their own experienced Russia analysts had no information about Trump being involved with Russian leadership officials, nor were others in sensitive positions at the CIA, NSA, and the Department of State aware of such evidence concerning the subject. In addition, FBI records prepared by Peter Strzok in February and March of 2017 showed that at the time of opening Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI had no information indicating at any time during the campaign, anyone in the Trump campaign had been in contact with anybody in Russian intelligence. Holy smokes. If they can do this to Donald Trump, to a guy who's running for president and then wins the presidency, they just made this up out of whole cloth. Made it up. And it gets worse. The speed and manner in which the FBI opened the investigation of the Crossfire Hurricane during the presidential election season, based on raw, unanalyzed, and uncorroborated intelligence, also reflects a noticeable departure from how it approached prior matters involving possible attempted foreign election interference, where they had plans that were aimed at the Clinton campaign. So apparently there was other information the FBI had learned that Russians were trying to do stuff with the Clinton campaign. So leading up to 2016, the FBI was required to deal with a number of proposed investigations that had the potential of affecting the election. In one of those instances, the FBI moved with considerable caution. In one such matter, FBI headquarters and department officials required defensive briefings to be provided to Clinton and other officials or candidates who appeared to be the target of the foreign intelligence. So they learn of a foreign government trying to interfere in the Clinton campaign. And what do? The FBI puts together a team of people. They go to the Clinton campaign and they brief them on it. They tell them exactly what's happening. Here's what we think has happened. The Russians are trying to do this to you. We thought you should know this information so you can be aware of what's happening. The same thing. They get information that supposedly comes from Australia that comes in 2016 about the Trump campaign. The FBI doesn't say a word to the Trump campaign. Not a word. Meanwhile, they're briefing the Clinton campaign on other things that are happening to them regarding Russian interference in their campaign. It continues. These examples are also markedly different from the FBI's actions with respect to other highly significant intelligence it received from a trusted foreign source pointing to a Clinton campaign plan to vilify Trump, tying him to Vladimir Putin, as to divert attention from the Clintons' concerns because of her private email server. Unlike FBI opening a full investigation based on raw, uncorroborated information, in this separate matter involving the purported Clinton campaign plan, the FBI never opened any kind of inquiry. They never issued any tasking or employed any analytical personnel at all. This lack of action was despite the fact that the significance of the Clinton plan, so the FBI receives information from a trusted source that the Clinton campaign has a plan to tie Trump to Vladimir Putin in order to muddy him up for the election. And they do nothing. The lack of action was despite the fact that the significance of the Clinton pan intelligence was such that the director of the FBI at the time, Comey, prompted him to brief the president, who was Obama, the vice president, who was Biden, the attorney general, and other senior government officials about the content within days of receipt of this information. This is like I said at the beginning of the thing, like this is a fiction novel. This is right out of a book. This would be a hell of a book, actually. I mean, we haven't even gotten into this. Crossfire Hurricane investigation. Within 10 days of opening Crossfire Hurricane, within 10 days. So they get information about a dude in a bar in Australia. They open a investigation. Within 10 days of opening that investigation, the FBI opened full investigations on four members of the Trump campaign. Guess who? Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, and Michael Flynn. Who did we hear about in the news every day, day in, day out, morning, afternoon, night, that these guys were, you know, Russian stooges and they were part of this plot for the 2016 campaign? George Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, and Michael Flynn. The FBI began working on requests for the use of FISA authorities against Page and Papadopoulos. They don't know anything. They haven't corroborated any of the information. They don't know if any of it is true. And the reason they did it all is because they knew that it wasn't true. They knew that it was manufactured. They knew that it was manufactured. And like I said, this is we're just scratching the surface on this whole thing. It's just scratching the surface. But again, keep it in mind who the players are. The Clinton campaign hires Perkins Coie Law Firm. Perkins Coie Law Firm hires Fusion GPS and Glenn Simpson. Glenn Simpson hires Christopher Steele, who owns a company called Orbis Business Intelligence, in order to do oppo research on the Trump campaign. And Christopher Steele has a sub-source, Igor Dachenko, who is supposed to be a Russian national, but he actually is living in the United States. He's living in Washington, D.C. at the time that this whole thing is going down. They start producing Christopher Steele and Igor Dachenko. Igor is feeding information to Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele is creating the dossiers that he then feeds to the FBI and leaks to the press. These dossiers contain all of this made-up information. The FBI subsequently interviews Christopher Steele and subsequently interviews Igor Dachenko. They offer them $1 million to corroborate the information that is in their reports. They can't corroborate any of it. They can't corroborate any of it. There's no proof that any of it happened. When interviewed by the FBI in January 2017, Igor Dachenko was unable to corroborate any of the substantive allegations in the reports. Rather, Dachenko characterized as the information that he had provided to Steele as rumor and speculation and the product of casual conversation. The FBI's own records, this is next level. Next level. And these reports were supposed to be, you know, muddying up these four guys so that they could be investigated. But the FBI's own records and the records established that Page, when being interviewed by a confidential human source, Page made multiple exculpatory statements about things that were in these documents. Now, you would think that that information would be important, right? Because they wanted to get FISA warrants against Carter Page. You would think that it would be important when they went to the FISA court to tell the court that he had provided exculpatory information from the information that was based in these reports, in these dossiers. But they never shared that with the court. So they left the court in the dark so that they could actually get the FISA warrants. And it gets worse. But we're out of time for today, folks. So you know what that means. Do you know what that means? That means that it is.
You are a sad, strange little man. You have my pity.
That would be the wrong button.
Hero of the
stupid.
Are you okay? I mean, it works. Or the mom and dad, or the neighbor, or when you go to church, or when you're. No, I really mean it. There are trusted interlocutors. Think of the people. If your kid.
Hear what he said? There are trusted interlocutors. Sorry, Joe. I didn't mean to interrupt the brilliance.
Wanted to find out whether or not there's a man on the moon or whatever, you know, something, or, you know, whether those aliens are here.
President of the United States, everybody.
You know, who are the people they talk to beyond the kids who love talking about?
Oh, yeah.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go. You know the things. You know how we talk about it. Are we the people?
Yeah, we.
Folks.
Yeah.
You're trying your best, but it never feels like enough. COVID has taken this year, just since the outbreak, has taken more than 100 years. Look, here's the lives. You think about it.
Man. You are one pathetic loser.
That's it, folks. Thanks for joining me today on the Ritz Report. Thursday, May 18th, 2023. When we come back next time, I will continue to dig into this Durham report. It is incredible. If you can, go and download it and just print out the executive summary. It's about, I don't know, 12 pages or so, and you're going to read it. Your jaw is just going to be on the ground. If you had lost faith in the FBI and the CIA and all the institutions that we believed at one point made this country such a great place, you are going to lose a large portion of that belief in the system that we all grew up in. I think the kids growing up today, I don't know that they ever had the belief in the system. Like, I know I was born in the early 70s, so, you know, I remember the bicentennial in 1976, and I remember, yeah, you just have a sense of pride of being an American. You have a sense of pride of being an American. At least I did. And I had family members that, you know, fought in World War II, and like that generation now is pretty much gone. And all of that, I don't know, pride in country, just that beaming pride that you have to be an American. I feel like the kids nowadays, unless they really have solid upbringings at home, most of them just don't have it. Like, I talk to friends of mine who have their woke kids, and the kids, you know, who do we think we are? We're the imperialist United States, this, that, and the other. Like, granted, we've done some things that we probably shouldn't have done. And the United States is not perfect, but humanity's not perfect. Humans aren't perfect. There's never going to be a perfect place. But like I say to all my friends who have kids that are doing this sort of thing, show me the other country where people are literally traveling from around the world to come across the border illegally. Show me that one other country where they're fighting to get into it. There is no other country. So for all the flaws that we have, we're still the best option that there is. And we still can be, as Reagan said, that shining city on a hill. I totally believe that. I think the American people still have that in them. I think that the people that are young, that have had their minds poisoned by a lot of these institutions, can be saved. That's going to take some time. It's going to take some work. But the country's great. And I think, you know, it's a fight for us to have. And it's definitely worth the cost. So that's it for me today. Thursday, May 18th, 2023. If you like the show, please go and give it a 5-star rating on the podcast download thing, whatever you use to get the show. And do me a favor and share it with a friend. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I will be back next week. I will see you then. And until then, Ritz out.